He's sitting, like, he has the copy of the Quran. What's the context of that?
Massive hates of Islam being pushed by all these right-wing influencers.
I want to apologize to Muslims. Did you see that?
And so first I want to say, just like to all Muslims growing up during my time in America, I am sorry on behalf of America
for the way
that you were treated.
She's getting paid $7,000.
Candace Owens?
You and her would be an amazing conversation. Let me see if I can make that happen.
I actually think submission to the will of God is a good thing.
I kind of think submission to God is like the whole point of life, but I didn't say anything.
He's like, Sharia. You know how that laugh he does?
Yeah.
Sorry, Sharia law.
We're still trying to take the land in the West Bank, and people, your audience probably knows, but
Christian kingdoms hunted them like animals. Muslim lands opened their gates wide.
Black sheep, because you're not going with the herd. Mm-hmm. So then they look at you like the odd one out.
I think Sean Strickland's, he's tweeted out enough public stuff. He's one guy who keeps his word. He's loyal. If I didn't have any Muslim friends, I'd probably hate you guys because the propaganda is so strong.
Look, we don't have to compromise our religion. You want to worship Jesus?
Yeah.
You want to believe in original sin? Go ahead. That's the freedom. Islam gives you that freedom too at the end of the day.
But people always tell me, oh, these Muslims want to kill you. Where does that come from?
But now, not to transgress limits, all right? You cannot go ahead and kill innocent human beings in battle. And that's not just a Muslim. That's Israeli life. I tell you to kill Christians. Show me where. Where is it?
And I go, wow. As Americans or white people, white Americans, we have lost these large family units.
I met, Patrick and David. We hung out, and
most are waking up. Originally, they were all thinking I was crazy. Now most are agreeing with me.
You don't come into Islam perfect. You come into Islam the worst, mm-hmm. and it makes you better.
This is the Dean Show.
No stranger to the Dean Show, my brother Jake Shields. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me back. We just finished. I just interviewed you for my podcast, and we're doing a second one. Yeah, I did your podcast a year and a half ago.
Yeah, sometime like that, yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea how big your show was. I thought it was just because I did a jiu-jitsu seminar here, and like, oh, I want to do something upstairs. And I had so many people come up to me, Muslims, and be like, oh, I loved you on the Dean Show, so... Cool. Congratulations on having a massive show.
Thank you very much, man. Thank you. And you really impressed. You had some good. I was watching Faraz Sahabi.
He's great. Yeah.
I've
had some my podcast has blown up quick. I've only had it for a year, Fight Back, and it's like slightly over a year, and a great growth. It's hard, growing content, but it's
I want to commend you for being brave. You have a lot of people who get in the octagon and they'll fight, but when it comes to speaking truth, they're cowards, and that's what differentiated Muhammad Ali. People like people out there who would go against the odds. They didn't care about getting canceled because they were up for a moral stand against certain evils that are happening, and you're one of those. Man, you'll be remembered for that.
Truth is so important, and originally I had so many people trying to talk me out of speaking up and stuff, but it was just so important. And now we have actually shifted the whole public opinion. We haven't actually stopped anything yet, but originally Israel was so popular in the U.S., and I was one of the very first large non-Muslim accounts to speak out against it. And it did. I think I did make massive change. I think I helped quite a bit, because unfortunately, it kind of had to have some non-Muslim speaking up too. Because before, people would always be like, "Oh, you're just Muslims. Why you support Palestine?" But that's when I realized, okay, I have a big following. I need to go and expose what's going on here. And I did get death threats. I had people going after my money. They tried to destroy you.
I want to make this point, this caveat here. I don't. Islam doesn't teach me to hate. You're here visiting. You have a friend you're visiting. I have Israeli friends, rabbis I've had on the program, so this has nothing to do with...
I'm constantly called anti-Semitic, which is false. I am very critical of Israel, and I think, the fact that, a lot of...
It's Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, so it's Jimmy Carter, and I think, I think these are terrible people, so yes, there's some terrible doing some terrible things, but I don't think all are, and I think we need more to start speaking up against this, or people are going to start hating, and I don't want that. I don't want hatred toward Jews, but I want to stop killing Palestinians, stop manipulating my government, etc.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about your training with Habib. You were you had some good training moments with Habib.
We used to be sparring partners.
You and Habib,
Yeah, we sparred a lot because I would go down to he wasn't my primary sparring partner. Nick and Nate Diaz were, but I would go down to American Kickboxing.
Yeah,
and we had such good sparring that, a lot of times people don't want to spar the toughest guy, but I would come in and Khabib would be like, oh, I want you. If it was either 15 or 25 minutes, it would just be me and him. Because sometimes, you trade out sparring partners. But I think it's great when you have two guys that are just battling, because it's like a real fight then, you know? Yeah. If I'm going a 25-minute sparring session with Khabib, you know, if one of us has won three or four rounds, it's not a big deal. But let's say we both know, and you don't talk about it, but you know in your head you're a round apiece, that fifth round comes, it's wartime. We're both thinking, we're both competitive, so we'd be digging. Just some amazing sparring. I have someone on film, but you can't really post the old sparring. But I have so much good footage of the sparring. But it just builds this brotherhood. Even though I was never that close with him outside the gym, he was still learning English. I feel like we have this close brotherhood bond still from that, from those tough sparring sessions.
So you guys outside the gym, you didn't ever have
we went lunch and stuff together. Yeah. We hung out a little bit, but they had their Dagestani crew that was, they were really, really tight. They have a really strong brotherhood. Mm-hmm. So it was like we were just like kind of friends out there. But there is something of a sparring partner that builds you this like respect. And he did something recently that showed that, oh, he still respects me. You know, get into that. But it's just like, okay, these guys, there's this brotherhood, you know. Unfortunately, he got in a fight with Nate Diaz, which is like really my brother. But I would love to make peace between them.
We got to do that. We got to make the peace.
Yeah, I think that could be done.
I think it could be done. I'll talk to, you know, Rizwan. You heard, you know, Rizwan, his other manager.
I'm not sure. I think it'd be pretty easy because Ali.
You hook up. You know, Ali
manages Khabib.
So we got to bring them together. Yeah, we're gonna bring. We make the peace connection.
You
want to
do that in private? Get them somewhere.
Habib, let's make it happen, Habib.
Yeah, I think we could just get lunch together or something and laugh about it, and people would love that. Yeah. Maybe film it. How funny would that be? Get Nate, and obviously privately not, but like later on, have them go do something together after we sit and make the peace privately.
And just us talking about it, you'd be surprised how things can just develop. And next thing you know,
they're just both such good people. There's no reason to fight each other. Nate's one of my best friends. I would have to do a little talking event some, but I'm sure Ali also could, you know, talk to me. Like, hey, you guys are both legends. Like, you're both great people. Let's just go have lunch together.
Yeah, done. Let's make it happen.
What a great idea you
gave me. Tell me this. When you saw the fight with, what did you think? Let's break that down a little bit.
Islam?
You
know?
Well, Islam right now. I mean, who was the other guy that was fighting? What's his name?
Jack. I can't think of his last name, but the guy was on a huge win streak.
18.
Islam had just moved up a weight, 15 pounds. I think he looked amazing. I don't think it was one of his best fights. Mm-hmm. Islam is a complete terror. You know, it was, you know, he wasn't going for that many submissions or anything, but he was fighting a tough, bigger opponent. And
best boxer, they were saying he's the best.
He's a really good striker. You know, it's hard to say best or not, but he's a really dangerous striker. You know, I think Islam maybe could have pushed a little more, but it was his first time at that weight. And Islam's, I think him and Topuria are the two best pound for pound right now. Those guys are just savages.
But I was like, what kind of tricks is he going to have up his sleeve? Because when he was coming out, I saw Craig Jones.
Craig Jones, phenomenal. But you know, he just has gotten better, but not at Islam's level. Islam is just like, I mean, he doesn't do jiu-jitsu, but he does. He calls it sambo, but he mixes sambo, wrestling, jiu-jitsu. They've all kind of blended to one art right now.
But not, he couldn't do nothing. So I was thinking, okay, Craig Jones is there. He's been coaching him. He got him in his camp. Mm-hmm. He's going to come up with some. What's that? What's that? The boogie choke?
Yeah. It's so hard to tap Islam. I trained with him once. Like,
you also trained with Islam?
I think I only trained with him one time because Khabib brought him out, and me and Khabib would always train. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh, this is, I didn't really, it was way before he was famous, and I just thought he was like some kind of, not nobody, but then I trained with him, I'm like, oh, this guy's good. I'm like, he was a little smaller at the time, and he's definitely way better now than he was back then. But even back then, I was like, oh, that guy's good. Khabib, who is that? And he's just like, oh, yeah, very good, very good. He's going to be champion.
Yeah.
It was like, this is like 10, 12, 13 years ago, maybe, you know, before he was in the UFC.
Mm-hmm. So when you're watching the fight, I mean, that was, I don't watch too many fights, but this one, I was, I watched it, and then I saw Craig Jones, and I thought, okay, what's he going to pull up his sleeve? And then I watched another fight with this, the guy he was fighting, and nobody can really keep him down on the ground.
He's good at getting up,
He's really good at getting up.
He doesn't break mentally either. A lot of guys will break mentally, but he never breaks mentally. But Islam was just too much. He did beat Bilal Muhammad, though, in a close fight. I'm friends with Bilal. I was rooting for Bilal, but he won.
Was Bilal able to keep him down? No, I don't think so.
Not really. And he didn't get very many takedowns. I think Bilal made a mistake of trying to box with him too much. Yeah. He was trying to like show his striking, and I think he got like stung a hurt couple. Uh-huh. It was still a close fight, in my opinion. It could have gone either way, but
how for people that didn't know those the calf kicks that he started with?
The calf kicks are, that's a very interesting question, actually, because the calf kicks, MMA hasn't evolved that much since I retired, but that is the one thing. No one was throwing calf kicks when I was fighting. And now they throw them like crazy. So that totally changes the game. So it's like, I've never been kicked in the calf hard.
Yeah.
I've never had anyone kick me in the calf hard. Now it's like the primary kick.
Because Joe Rogan kept talking about like how damaged his leg was, right?
From those kicks. It was a little bit. It's hard to tell, you know. And a lot of times the pain comes the next day.
The takedowns that he got were just very easy.
Beautiful. Double. Beautiful.
No sprawl, nothing. He just
blasted it, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a phenom on the ground. He's like truly great wrestler. And I shouldn't call it jiu-jitsu because he doesn't, but he uses lots of jiu-jitsu. He calls it sambo, so I should respect him and call it sambo. He's blended them, though.
Yeah. So we were supposed to we touched upon this, but how's Dan Bazarian doing?
Dan's I don't know why he has a bad rep. He is one of the most honorable people I know. Such like a good person. And look how much he's risked, too.
I was looking forward to seeing you guys. I was talking to Hassan. He was with you, right, Hassan? And then I had Sneeko with me, and we were there in Bosnia and had everything set up. Well, you guys,
I really wish we'd have came by.
Next time we talked earlier.
We didn't know what the situation. Sneeko didn't do a very good job of explaining what was going on. So I should have talked to you and we came by because we were in France and we ended up going to Romania to meet up with the Tate brothers after that.
Yeah.
And then he went to Qatar, but I skipped.
You guys went to Romania also. How was that? You got to
that
see
was
it.
Great. Yeah. You know, that was the Tate brothers were amazing. Yeah. They show even the first night they didn't go out, but Tristan's like, oh, someone's going to pick you up. You know, you're bringing bottles everywhere, everything. I went to go pay. Like, no, Tristan has everything covered. Like, amazing hospitality. Mm-hmm. They went and hung out with them for a couple of nights and then took off.
Yeah, so
really, really good people. I think they said outrageous things to get clicks, but they're like good-hearted people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, gave big money to my friend's charity, like I think a couple $100,000, and didn't even like mention it. Mm-hmm. Like crazy stuff like that, you know. Like, so I see they're not faking when they say they share the money. I literally saw him give a couple $100,000 to one of my friends
for,
I think it was for orphans,
mm-hmm.
Palestinians, or maybe just orphans all over.
Mm-hmm. So we'll put that down into next time. Hopefully we can have you in Bosnia because you've never been there. And it's really close to France right there in Europe. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably an hour flight or something like that.
I've traveled a lot, but never been to Bosnia. And it's always better to travel when you know people. Like,
yeah.
It's like, that's what we weren't for the, Sneeko didn't explain the
he loves it. Sneeko loves Bosnia. Mm-hmm. He loves Bosnia.
He did tell us to come though, so it's not his fault.
Yeah, I think he don't want too many people to know about it.
Right, we should have came.
Yeah, but tell me, so what's the story behind, we saw with Dan, people really, it went viral, him reading the Quran. He's sitting, like he has the copy of the Quran. What's the context of that, do you know?
I think Hassan gave us some copies of it, and we both just been kind of looking into the religion a little bit. I think both of us can relate a lot to it. Neither one of us are Muslims, but we find a lot that we relate to in Islam.
Mm-hmm. I think this is more of a reason now for the brothers, Islam, Habib, maybe to also invite you to Dagestan. Have you been there to Dagestan?
No, I've never. That's actually interesting. No, I would go. You know,
yeah.
But I probably wouldn't go to Chechnya now after having some problems with some Chechenian people. Well, in our last podcast, we're talking about how there's, you know, good Muslims and bad Muslims, like of every faith, you know. I ran into some Chechens that weren't the nicest people.
Yeah.
And then I said some things, and then I had some Chechens write me and be like, brother, there's so many great Chechenians. Why would you?
Yeah,
and I'm like, you know what? I apologize. I guess because a couple Chechenians I dealt with weren't the best people.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have blamed it on all Chechens.
Have you met Hamza Chamai?
Yeah.
You met?
No, not the biggest fan. Oh. We've had some issues.
Oh, okay. We got to make some peace there too now. Is that redeemable?
I would make peace with them. You know, yeah. I think part of the problem, me and Nate Diaz got booked to do a reality show. It was so last minute in Thailand. It was a Russian reality show here. And they were paying good money. So I figured, probably Russian mob or something. We don't pay. It was like 2 days. So we get our stuff together, fly out there. We show up, we walk in. It's all Chechens and Dagestanis. And then we both had issues with Hamza. And then I'm friends with Khabib, but Nate had problems with him. We walk in, we're like,
boy.
This is a setup.
Uh-huh.
And it was bad right from the beginning. Multiple mm-hmm. fights breaking out. We ended up leaving the first day of filming.
I didn't expect this. Now, I didn't know. I had no idea about
it. It was wild.
I know. But now I'm thinking again, we just talked about, you know, the being peacemakers for this. How do we make this now? We actually had Hamza Chamai. He was training at my cousin Idris' school here, his training
really?
Camp.
I'd be willing to talk to him. It's just, you know, because I've talked crap about him before, talked crap to him, so is Nate. But, like, I'm willing, you know, if someone says he's a good person and vouches for it, and if he's willing to want to sit and have a conversation, I would 100% do it.
There we go. You see,
he might be like, I hate Jake. And I don't know, you know, I don't know.
Hamza, we got to make this happen, huh? Yeah.
And it's not been that bad since he was talking crap with Paulo Costa. I was at Paulo training with the gym, and it was like him and like 10 people. So I'm like, well, the first time training with Paulo was the funny part, but it's like, well, you're here alone, bro. So I'm ready to throw down with you. So we were going to throw down.
Who's that?
With Chimaya.
Yeah.
He was talking crap to Paulo, but there was a bunch of them. So I'm like, all right, I got your back, Paulo. First time meeting him, Paulo respected that. He's just like, brother, thank you so much for, you know, I'm not going to let a guy get, like, I don't know if they're in a jumping off. There's like 10 of them. So I'm like, all right, let's throw down. But then it ended up getting broken up.
Yeah. Wow.
And then Nate got into like a brawl backstage with him at the UFC.
What happened with Dylan Danis after the fight?
I don't even know. He's just such a clown. Anytime Dylan gets beat up is a great thing. Like, after the Khabib, when he beat Connor, you know, it was Dylan he was going after when he jumped over the cage for the flying knee. Dylan is just disrespectful. I can't remember what he said, but he said some like really bad things about you don't talk about someone's family and stuff, and he disrespected his family. I mean, he was a good person, like I said. It's not like we're the closest, but like I know he's a good person. So to disrespect his family, he's not okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah, just going overboard. Yeah.
And Dylan does that. He just says like things like way, way beyond. Like, you know, he used to be a really good grappler, but then he fell off. I mean, I had a grappling match with him. I beat him, but he was good when I went against
him. You fought Dylan now also?
Yeah, grappling, just jiu-jitsu, but I beat him, but he was really good at the time I went against him. But now he's just, all he does is just try to get hype.
Last time I saw him fight was that Logan Paul? Was it?
But that was Jake. Boxing, though. Boxing, he's not a good boxer. He was.
Yeah.
That was such a lame fight. Why would you take a world champion jiu-jitsu guy and box him? He's in no boxing. But he won. He won, I think, world's his blue belt, purple belt, brown belt, and I don't think he won his black belt, but he was, like, really good for a while.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But he just fell into ego and trying to be famous and, like, turned into a complete clown.
Tell me, shifting over here to your, when people would, on one end, you had Muslims who were, you know, really... you know, commending you for, you know, speaking out. You get a lot of hate on the other side. Are people?
I
saw some Israeli guys calling you out to fight.
That they are backed out when the fights actually come together. No Israeli guy's gonna fight me. No, I get like death threats. They wrote my name on bombs that I paid for with my money. In person, only one time a guy came up talking crap at an airport, and then I pulled out my phone and started filming him back, and went really viral. I might have gone a little too extreme. I really went off on this guy. Some guy because he walked by with his phone out and been like, how does it feel to be the biggest scumbag anti-Semite in the world? And I'm just like, oh, I went after that dude. Just like, it's one of those videos that went like insanely viral because I just went off on him. Like, I'm sick of these people. Like, no, I don't hate, but I hate these parasites. I don't want my tax dollars to be done to like kill, maim, slaughter civilians. And you know what they've done in Palestine is just pure evil. And it's like, people not speaking up about it pissed me off. They need to stop being cowards. People finally are speaking up. And I'm also really angry that my government supports this. This wouldn't be possible without my tax dollars. Like, our representatives support this country. And that's the only reason we have conflict with places in the Middle East. America was extremely popular in these countries before Israel. But, you know, doing this, it's rightfully, you know, made. I can understand why some people live in these countries wouldn't like America, because we're funding Israel to go and slaughter and kill Palestinians. We invaded Iraq. You know, we're constantly, you know, Afghanistan. We're causing all these wars. But in my opinion, lots of these wars are being orchestrated from Israel.
I mean, you've really, I mean, would you consider yourself a critical thinker?
Yeah, I always think independently. Like, so every issue. If you're 100% in line with the party, you're not a critical thinker. I think most people aren't, though, which is why I started speaking up. I realized, like, oh, it's only a small amount of people that are really setting the narratives that everyone else follows. And that's what, you know, like on Twitter, me, Dan Blazeri, and a few other guys went and helped change the whole narrative.
Huge impact, right?
No, so people tell me you can't make a difference. And like that's complete cowardly way of thinking. Like, I'm sure your show has had massive influence as well. Like, you can make a massive influence because you can get people following it, and then they tell their friends. It's only a few people that are shift whole narratives. Before, it's always been the media, but we can be the media now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. What do you think what's happening now, this attack on Tucker Carlson?
very orchestrated. My whole timeline was him being attacked because Tucker, he's for a long time, he's been my favorite journalist, and he's just crushing it on the Palestine-Israel stuff now, and he's going hard. I think he was definitely a little scared initially. I mean, we had some private conversations with him, and he was, you know, he was telling me, oh, I'm proud of what you're doing, but I could tell, but he goes, be very careful.
Wow.
And that made me be like, oh man, he knows this is like, he seemed like very concerned for me, and that made me a little concerned, but I'm like, you know, we're all going to die. You know, I've come to terms with God. So it's like, you know, it's all you got to do. I'm not going to live my life as a coward. We need to stand up and quit being bullied and make actual change. You know, I'm trying to figure out what the next steps are now because we haven't won, but we're winning the information war. That's despite being up against a multi-billion-dollar media machine. Guys like us with podcasts and Twitter and stuff are winning the information war. That's crazy. It shows people don't trust the media anymore.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, what do you think with someone? I mean, Tucker, from going from being the golden boy of Fox News to really being such a, he's got a huge, huge following, and he's risking a lot. You can see he's looking for the truth, and he finds it, and he's just letting. That's all he wants to do. He's getting the truth.
I think Tucker spent his entire life being a propaganda thing for the machine. Then he had that realization. I think he was disgusted with himself and like ashamed of what he had done. I think he's trying to make right. And I think he did have a little fear because I think he actually knows what's going on. He knows deep what's going on. I think his dad was in the CIA. He was in that world, but he's decided, you know what? I need to do what's right with God and spread the truth. And he's going hard now, making things like, you know, 9/11, questioning that, like all things which are true, in my opinion. There's massive amounts of evidence, but he's got the balls. And he has a huge following, too. Mm-hmm.
Are you seeing... Because I think it's a different world. People, do you think it's just on X?
No. People are coming to me all the time in person now.
Huh?
People come up to me constantly in person, like all over the streets. People are coming to me all the time, wanting to talk about it. It's not just on X. People think it is. It's not.
How about the propaganda, the push to, you know, this demonization of Muslims, of Islam? You know, I'm seeing people in my timeline that, you know, I'm not even subscribed to, and they're just popping up. I don't know, these bots or what is it?
That's huge. Okay, yeah, obviously that's been going on for a long time, but in the last few months, it's just majorly jumped to my timeline. That has to be orchestrated because there's this massive hate of Islam being pushed by all these right-wing influencers, which... to me is terrible. I'm one of the few guys, which I think the right left paradigm is kind of dumb, but I'm considered right.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm pro-Islam, like me and Dan Blazarian or two of the, I think there's a few more, but we're pro-Islam guys in the right. And there's all these guys pushing hate. And I don't know. I think it's orchestrated because they want people to be like, Islam's bad, therefore Israel must be good.
Mm-hmm. And I want to, I just, for the people, when you say Islam, I always define words. When you say pro-Islam, it means pro-submission to the will of God. Mm-hmm. That's all it means. Islam means submission to the will of God. That's it.
So, no, exactly. I think there's so many similarities between Christianity and Islam. That's why I try telling my friends, like, you guys both love and adore Jesus Christ. What is this other religion?
We're pro-Christ. We believe Christ will be king when he returns. You know, Christ is king. Mm-hmm. We believe he'll be the king. He'll be the ruler in charge when he returns. Like, we said we're pro Christ, pro Messiah. We believe in him, we love him, and I think this is orchestrated to divide Christians and Muslims, and to get to demonize Muslims, to make them look barbaric, like they're uncivil. You know, they're coming to they hate our way of life, so they want to
they hate our way of life,
so they want to take over, and they're going to be doing this. That there's that crazy lady.
People
you
always
see
tell me these Muslims want to kill you. It's like, okay, I get along with them pretty well. I've been to their countries. I don't think you want to kill me right now.
How about that? You see these people, like there's this lady running for office. She's burning the Quran. She's like, you know,
well, imagine if people did this with Jews. And the thing some of these people say are sick, like. Full genocide of like the Palestinians. They say, imagine talking about killing a kid. Like that's just the most. I mean, you'd be banned out of your house, but it's also evil.
Evil,
like,
evil. Yes.
Any child, you know, a child is innocent and pure. Would you said something really interesting in your last podcast with the Christian? I'd never even thought about this of the Christianity. How the original sin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think a child's born with sin. A child's born like innocent and pure. I don't mean to disrespect Christianity by saying that, but it's just like. There's nothing more pure and innocent than a child, which is why the worst thing you can do is hurt a child.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about, the belief, you know, in Islam, that we believe in original goodness, that everyone is born good from the get-go. Now when you get to a certain age, Now you go ahead and you'll do something that you're not supposed to be doing, a sin or whatnot, and then that's marked against you. But if you turn to the Creator and ask forgiveness, He forgives. But no one's born with now, because Adam, he sinned, and now you carry that stain as a child. Yeah. No, that's not something that we believe in, and that's not from God.
Yeah, you know? Even if you have bad parents, you don't carry their sins. Like, you can't help who you're born into.
It's like, example, if somebody, for instance, from, let's say your great-great-grandfather committed a crime, just an example, and now you, because what your great-great-grandfather did, you got a felony on your record, and you got to, like, expunge for it, and now you got to go ahead and believe that someone died for your sins to expunge that record.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. It's like North Korea sometimes will punish, like, whole families for something to do. Like, you know, that's, like to me, I think, child clearly is born pure and innocent.
Yeah, no, that's what we're touching upon. That's very common sense. It goes with our nature, you know, as human beings.
Yeah, I never even thought about the idea of original sin, that's what that means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I have, you know, I have love Christians and ton of respect for Christianity too, so I'm not like trying to disrespect the religion in any way, but that's a strange concept of trying to say a child is born with sin.
Mm-hmm. Have you had a chance to interview Candace Owens?
No, but I've been talking to her a little bit, like on X, DMing her, so I think I'll try to invite her on my show. I know she's so busy, but I think she might do it next time I'm in Nashville.
I think if we break through this, I think I just interviewed a public Republican politician. He was running for Senate, Bruce Fenton, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was trying to get Christians on the program to discuss, to talk, I felt many are hesitant. They're scared, you know, with the public, the media.
Yeah, if I can set you and Candace up, that would be amazing.
If you can make that.
The Amblazarian's a lot closer to her than I am, but that would be an amazing. I want to talk to her too, but you are a completely different discussion, so I think
because
that would be great.
Her, like, when she goes, she did an interview, she said, look, I feel so bad. I feel bad that we blamed Muslims all these years, and I want to apologize to Muslims. Did you see that?
And so first I want to say, just like, to all Muslims growing up during that time in America, I am sorry on behalf of America
for
the way that you were treated. For 9/11, I think about it now, the propaganda to make me afraid of Muslims. I can't even imagine being a Muslim growing up after 9/11 in America, because I know how I felt about them. And I was young, I was 11 years old, but that beating every day in our heads that every Muslim was a terrorist was the idea that you got.
I make jokes about it, but like, you don't understand. Like, I had to shave my face to go to airports. My mom would make me shave my face like at school. Like, I was so young. This is actually funny. I had a mustache in like the fourth grade, and my mom made me nair it, because she was like, you got it, like, because it was really, really bad. Because whatever your, like, the household would say, the kids have no filter. Mm-hmm. So they would just say whatever they wanted to me. But at a young age, I realized that I myself, as a Middle Eastern, was racist too. I was like, oh, it's not us, it's them. And so I would point my finger out of fear. I'm like, no, they did it. But then I went to what country did I just go to? Sorry,
Canada?
I went to Saudi Arabia, and I don't think I've ever been to a country that was more hospitable to me. Mm. The love that I got, the respect that I got, I literally sat back and I hung myself out to dry on a podcast. I go, wow, I was brainwashed. I was so scared. I didn't bring her.
Yeah, same. And so first, I want to say, just like, to all Muslims growing up during that time in America, I am sorry on behalf of America
for
the way that you were treated. It is so unacceptable. When I go back and I re-examine that propaganda, that brainwashing that took place in the classroom to make me scared of something, I didn't even know what a Muslim was. I remember going to the airport and someone was a Hindu and I was scared of them. Like, oh my God, they're going to take this off of his head. Blah, blah. I thought that was a Muslim, right? Mm-hmm. There was no education about anything. And the reason for that, you know, he who controls the textbooks controls the entire country, in my view, right? It was because everything that we did responding to 9/11 should be assessed as whether or not they were crimes against humanity. We bombed a million Iraqi civilians. We killed a million Iraqis. What were we doing in Iraq? The Saudis were on the plane. They just said there's weapons of mass destruction, and then they never found them. But they, in the process, they killed a million Iraqi civilians, right? And it made us think it's okay to just keep bombing Muslims. That was the purpose, to me, of that educational propaganda and brainwashing, is that we feel nothing for Muslims if they die.
I didn't see that, but no, I think she's open-minded. So that, I think you and her would be an amazing conversation. Let me see if I can make that happen.
Yeah, I appreciate.
I'm not close to her, but Dan's fairly close to her, and I'm really close to Dan.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to Dan. I think that'd be amazing to talk to him too.
Yeah, Dan turned down most interviews, but he might with you. He wants to talk about things that are different, because everyone asks him the same questions all the time.
Yeah.
But like, you might would have to come to Vegas for that though.
We'll see.
That's the only problem. It's hard to get Dan to travel.
And then Tucker also, he was, if you see him, he was like, I actually think submission to the will of God is a good thing.
He's like, you know what Islam means? Submission. And like, let it hang in the air. Like, mm-hmm. that was self-evidently mm-hmm. disgusting. And I was like, I kind of think submission to God is like the whole point of life, but I didn't say anything. I was like, I don't think I'm against that, actually. Like, anyone who submits to God, like, I'm just for that.
That's actually Islam. And then he talked about, you know, paraphrasing what he was talking about, Tucker, he was somebody, he's like, Sharia. And you know how that laugh he does?
Yeah.
<I don't know. laughs> Sharia law.
Did you hear him talking about
it? I haven't heard that, but
he was like, look at New York and look, and he's talking about all these different cities, all the crime and everything. He says something of like, Sharia be good here, like something like that, you know?
Yeah, I lived in San Francisco for a while and I started thinking like, maybe we do need some more serious laws.
Yeah.
Maybe you should just stop stealing.
You see what's happening. You know, people running in, breaking the jewelry boxes, taking all this stuff. And
when you live in these places and your home gets just, you have to leave because your home city gets run down. It's like, okay, we need a little bit of Sharia.
Yeah. But no Muslim. I mean, this is another, you know, false thing that's being put out there. Muslims are trying to change the constitution. This is all baloney. This is all lies. You know, Sharia is actually already here praying. You just saw us pray. That's pray. We're implementing God's law, praying, family, you know, that's Sharia, you know, feeding the poor. That's Sharia. But people take the penal code and they want to go ahead and now make that. That's like the laws there for criminals. Yeah. And then it's just like what I give you the example, the aliens coming down and they want to know about the Constitution, and then you tell them about the electric chair, the lethal injection, send them on their way, but you didn't teach them all the other good things the Constitution has.
Reason why they get these things, because they did something really bad.
Exactly.
Sometimes, you know, there needs to be punishment versus really bad things. If someone harms a child, they should be taken care of.
And then many of these things are actually in the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. These laws, many of them are there also. So it's like people need to get educated, and that's why it's important that people like Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson and people who now are going outside of the narrative, and they're realizing, okay, we've been lying and propagating the lies, and now they're propagating truth. I think this is a component also to connect with Muslims to talk.
We need a brotherhood between Islam and Christianity. Obviously, they're not going to be the same religion. They're going to have their differences, but they shouldn't be enemies.
Look, we don't have to compromise our religion. You want to worship Jesus?
Yeah.
You want to believe in original sin? Go ahead. That's the freedom. Islam gives you that freedom too at the end of the day. Islam safeguards the Christians. Their religion is safeguarded. Like in a Muslim majority country, like say Jerusalem, at the time when Muslims ruled, or in Spain for 700, 800 years, you know, Muslims ruled.
Yeah.
This was the golden age for the Jews. Christians also. People actually flew to Muslim lands to learn Arabic, just like now people learn English. That was the same thing at that time. So now, but there was rights. There were people who were, they were protected to go ahead and to pray, to have their churches, to do what they're doing. You know, in Bosnia, you had the war, the genocide that happened there. You had churches after the war that, you know, remained.
Yeah.
But the mosques, 600 of them were destroyed.
Well, people say that, we need the to protect the Holy Land. Who protected it before they were there in 1849? That was Muslims kept it safe for forever.
Exactly, yeah. I think what's his name? Faraz Zahabi. He really did a great job going in and explaining.
Yeah, Faraz is a great, great guest.
You know,
people always tell me, oh, these Muslims want to kill you. Where does that come from? Like, I've been to these Muslim countries and I was treated amazing. No one tried to kill me. Like, where does that myth come from? I mean, obviously, maybe there's some crazy Muslims that like...
So what they'll do is they'll open up certain passages from the Quran, and they're passages that are in a context of battle, right? During the time when the pagans were fighting with the Muslims and God had given permission to fight, but now not to transgress limits, all right? You cannot go ahead and kill innocent human beings in battle. This is clear. Prophet Muhammad, when he sent out his general, he said, do not, he gave instructions. Like, before the Geneva Convention, you had these world rules of engagement.
You can just do whatever.
You cannot attack places of worship, kill innocent children, non-combatants, basically.
So
innocent.
Muhammad had all these rules.
That's just from God coming. This is like not him making it up. But this is in the Quran, there's a chapter 5, verse 32. It says, killing one innocent being is as you kill the world. Saving one innocent life is if you save the world.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Interesting.
Right? And that's not just a Muslim. That's Israeli life, a Jewish life. You save an innocent. Let's say you have a Palestinian, you know, and a Jew, and they're fighting. You cannot go, and I hear some of these rabbis talking about taking out kids.
Because they think they're going to grow.
You've seen that, right?
The point is right here that Hashem say, do not have mercy on the children. All their children also. Why? There's no difference between them and their children. In 10 years from now, these children will attack you on the way.
Oh, I've seen a lot of these videos. I had a guest on the other day saying, like, oh, these, they're not taught to hate. But there's little videos of little kids saying, you know, death to the Palestinians, wanting full genocide. And you can't really blame the kid for that. It's the parents and people teaching them, because they're just children getting this put in their head.
But you can't, in Islam, you cannot do that. This is very, you know, so when people now, they attack you, oh, you're sitting with a Muslim, and they tell you to kill Christians, and show me where. Just so, where is it?
Yeah, it's crazy how much, like you mentioned earlier, there's been a massive push of propaganda. I think it's because they realize they're starting to lose the information war, so now they're trying to push this hate towards Muslims again, which has been happening for a while, you know. When I was young, after 9/11, before, I didn't really know any Muslims, so I wasn't like terribly racist against them or biased, I guess, but I figured, oh, you know, they're a little bit off. But then I met a couple of Muslim friends, and they were just such good people. They'd go out of their way to help me. And then I also noticed they did a better job of keeping like large family units, doing family meetings, all their cousins. And I go, wow, as Americans or white people, white Americans, we have lost these large family units.
Yeah, and then people would think the propaganda got just so insane that people who would go over say, I'm going to Morocco, or I'm going to Egypt, or I'm going to, you know, Muslim majority Saudi Arabia, and then people would hear from others say, don't go there, they're going to chop your head off. They're going to, like,
it's as crazy as when I was in Israel trying to go to Egypt, and they were the same thing, don't go. But then, you know, I was in Morocco not long ago, traveled.
You've been in Morocco also?
I was in Morocco training some fighters for the King of Morocco, literally met the King of Morocco.
You met the King of Morocco?
Yeah,
wow.
He seemed like a super cool guy. I didn't hang out with him for long, but he treated me great. It was such an amazing experience getting to live such a crazy life through fighting. Like, who would think, you know, poor kid drops a trailer that I'm hanging out with the King of Morocco.
So if Muslims are reading a book that's saying kill Christians, non-Muslims.
Yeah, he would have killed me right there.
I mean, come on, man.
Well, for a couple of days, I traveled around Morocco by myself because I wanted to travel around. I was meeting.
Did you feel threatened at all?
Well, it was peak of COVID, so there was no white people there. So everyone was curious.
You're almost like the only white.
So they were all curious my story. People were inviting me to their homes for tea. And it was amazing just because everyone was like, oh, what are you doing here? And people just treated me so good. It's like, they're not trying to kill me. They're curious my story. Yeah. Same thing, traveling through Turkey, you know, been to like Abu Dhabi.
But they hate your way of life, Jay.
They didn't. They were curious about my way of life. That's why I don't understand how this propaganda works.
That's the Zionist hate machine. That's what it is. I've had people, Christians on. I have recently, Dr. Jones, they talk about this. This is systematically set up. There's billions being spent to go ahead and to create
literally
this rift.
Billions.
Rift between Muslims and Christians so they can get sympathy from the American public so they can get funded to go ahead and throw the bombs on the churches and the mosques over there in Gaza. Yeah.
It's sad how well it's worked. But I think we are making a big difference in the media war. It's like I can feel the change. As someone, you know, who uses my real name and I'm constantly very social now, people are constantly coming up to me now, thanking me and asking me questions. I have friends, a lot of famous friends text me asking questions now. I think too, like a lot of people that people know me, they trust me, they know I'm like not a crazy person. So at first start talking, you get guys like Chuck Liddell, these type of guys like asking questions like, oh, why are you saying this? I'm curious. He's, you know, got some guys like that have fell into the I don't like the left, Antifa. They support Palestine, therefore they must be wrong. And it's like, no, just it's true. Those guys can be idiots, but they're still right about this instance.
Mm-hmm. How about the people like you recently saw the interview with the Nelk boys?
Oh, God. They got
you know that?
They didn't watch it, but they interviewed Benjamin Netanyahu in softball. He's wanted an international warrants for arrest crimes, and they gave him a softball interview. But you know what? The backlash was so heavy. They brought Nick Fuentes on, and they tried bringing Dan Blazarian on to, like, it's like the opposite. You used to have to go to a rabbi and apologize, but they, like, messed up so bad they had to go, like, apologize.
Mm-hmm. How, did you meet them? You know them personally?
I met them, but don't know them well.
But that would be good for them to have you on to discuss this also.
Right? Yeah, no, I that's actually a good idea. They're not really like...
But what do you think they got? I mean, you said a softball interview. So they brought... How is this person? I see him on PBD Podcast. Mm-hmm. He was on there.
Was he on there too? I didn't watch that yet.
Yeah, and he was on... rounds on some of these...
Did he give him a softball interview too, or did he ask him harder questions? Oh, no. That's disappointing.
Yeah, very softball.
Yeah, Patrick Bedavid, he came out to interview Dan Blazarian.
Yeah.
And he was being all friendly, kind of acting like he agreed. And then the interview, he kind of like switched up how he was acting. And I think that kind of, you could see Dan just like change right away when he starts asking about Israel.
Yeah. You know, I was really, I don't know if it's just my naive side or something, because I met, you know, Patrick Bedavid. We hung out and I was really looking forward to in the beginning before what's happening. And it's an interesting story. Before what's happening, you know, in Gaza, Palestine, they were really commending Muslims for really stepping up and being like the last front against the sexualization of the children.
Yes.
You know, Muslims are protesting things, and they were commending Muslims, and they were like, mm-hmm. Patrick and David was talking about how we got to work together with Muslims. Mm-hmm. All of that changed now. Now he brought out one of the biggest Islam haters, and I thought he was going to use me as a resource. I said, look at me as a Muslim friend. I'm here. Mm-hmm. You know, we can set up dialogues and talks, and we can do something positive. You know, but it seems like, you know, I'm very disappointed the way...
He's been disappointing, you know, and I don't hate the guy because he does talk to controversial people, but he's been a lot of people have been disappointing, yeah. Which is why I started my own podcast. I've been disappointed in a lot of these podcasts, so I'm like, you know, why not start my own?
Yeah, I
could sit there and bitch and cry about it, or I could try to make change.
Yeah, that's very, very important, man.
Yeah, but so many guys have been so disappointing. You realize people are just so scared because, well, they do control most, you know, all the money. The influencers are getting paid $7,000 per tweet to be pro-Israel. That's a lot of money, you know. Wow. 10 tweets at $70,000.
Uh-huh.
That's like, you know, $70,000 a month these guys are making.
How is it when you talk to people, let's say some of the people that you've known, UFC fighters and others, and this topic comes up, do you feel people get into a state of cognitive dissonance? You know,
most are waking up. Most are waking up. Originally, they were all thinking I was crazy. Now most are agreeing with me.
It goes through that stage, right? At first, because
questioning myself at first. Am I going crazy?
Because usually people are, it's the sheep mentality. So you're the one, now the black sheep, because you're not going with the herd. Mm-hmm. So then they look at you like the odd one out.
Yep. Well, a good example is, you know, I don't share private conversations, but I think Sean Strickland's, he's tweeted out enough public stuff. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he's still a little anti-Muslim. I've been trying to work on that. But before he was like, thought I was like an idiot for my stance on Israel.
Yeah.
But then he starts really like, oh shit, you're right. Now I just need to get him to realize that Islam's not a problem.
How is I was with the guy when Sean Strickland, he talks about, have you met him, the one that, you know, the story he talks about, I'm with these Russians, we're training, and then the one I forgot his name, he calls him over, he was in the UFC also, I said to my tongue, Sean Strickland trained with him.
Was it when he said something about Muhammad?
Yeah, he said, yeah, hey, I cannot be your friend.
I was there that day, and the guy...
You were there?
Yeah.
So what's the guy's... he doesn't speak...
I can't remember who that was, but they weren't too happy about it, but like, obviously.
But I was supposed to have him on the program. He was here with the camp, really nice guy, and he really was respecting the relationship that he had with Sean Strickland. You know what I mean? He didn't want to say nothing. See, that's what stand-up guys are.
But it's also like, I can't be sparring with you if you're disrespecting Muhammad.
At the same time, that was the other thing. And he felt like, look, if we talk as men together, you know, he's going to have a different... because that kind of slowed him down. After that, he stopped. But then Sean again started up, you know.
Yeah, I think that day they temporarily worked it out. But then I told the story once in a podcast, and Sean said I didn't tell it right, so I'm not going to try to tell it. I don't know if Sean was right, if I told it right or not. But I was definitely there that day, and there was some kind of altercation between him and one of those guys. And I think they talked it out that day. They went in and sparred. But then, I don't think he's disrespected Muhammad since then. But, a little bit anti-Muslim still.
Yeah, the thing
but
is,
but
like,
yeah, he's came man, he came man to man with him, and like, Sean, we need to talk. You know,
but here's the thing. Look. If we sit, I would love to sit with someone like people like Sean Strickland and others who've been they've become victims to the hate problem, the misinformation campaign.
It's a strong.
So
hate,
if you can sit, and we'd love for you to ask questions, and let's have a dialogue, and then make your judgment after that. You know, after
Sean's the guy that might sit down and talk with you and stuff. Yeah. If you ever come to Vegas, you might have come to Vegas for some of these.
He's there too, also. Sean.
Yeah.
Yeah, how was it when you were you spent some time, a lot of time with Sneeko?
I love Sneeko. He's great. You know, I don't like a lot of those like influencers, but he's one guy who keeps his word. He's loyal. He's a good friend. He's been nothing but great.
How is it when you saw him? He would go. He'd be with you, and then he's gonna. Were you surprised that he accepted Islam and he was actually talking to you
a little bit? Was already a Muslim when I started hanging out with him. He's been Muslim for a little while, and you know he's. Didn't really surprise. Like I've actually had a lot of Muslim friends. So
there was a guy I interviewed from your one of your students. He went and it was a few years ago, if I remember correctly. He went to shake his hand, and then he didn't shake his hand. It was a big controversy. It was over the news. And then, do you remember what I'm talking about? He was in Strange in Vegas. He's one of your student Muslim fighters, and I had him on the program. And it was all over the news because they they turned it
Bashar
around.
Brother?
I forgot his name. Yeah.
One of the, is this light guy? One of the Bashar brothers?
Lightweight.
I think he's one of the Bashar brothers.
Is
yeah.
Is he still competing?
Yeah, they're very talented. Yeah. One of them's undefeated still. Was it one of them got in a fight with?
But he beat the guy bad. He beat him.
Oh yes, it was the Israeli guy.
Yes,
it was an Israeli guy. Yeah, it weigh-ins. It goes way worse than what you're saying. They went there at weigh-ins and he called him a dirty terrorist.
That's it. That's it. I forgot about that. Yeah, that's the
right on camera. Could you imagine just like how arrogant these people were? Yeah. I was just like, whoa, and he beat the crap out of them. Yeah. That was
His name?
That was Javed Basharat.
That's your
extremely talented fighter. Yeah, him and then he has his brother Farid Basharat.
He's still in the UFC.
Yep, they're both extremely talented. Unfortunately, they moved to Florida, but I'm still really close with them.
What part of Florida are you?
They are at American Top Team. Because for me, I have so much going on. I was only able to be a part-time coach for them. I was able to train them 2-3 times a day, and they needed full-time.
Yes.
They were amazing people, though. It wasn't like we left under bad circumstances. I even told them, I'm like, bro, I have too much other stuff going on to be your guys' full-time coach. But they are amazing fighters, amazing students. You know, they learn so well. Like, we spent a lot of time tightening their jiu-jitsu up. I think either one of them has a good shot of being a champ one day.
Yeah. So when you see the direction that things are going, when you talk to people like that was when you mentioned Sean Strickland, he was at one point he said something about I'm going to have to something along the lines of put on a palace how thin, the direction he was starting to see the direction things are going.
Yes.
And he was getting fed up also.
He's extremely sick of Israel, you know. Like, I know he's tweeted some of that publicly because I don't share people's political opinions if they have it, but he's definitely not happy with Israel. Well, and initially, he was an Israel supporter.
I think this was, at the end, Charlie Kirk, I think they were trying to get him to cancel Dave Smith, Tucker Carlson.
He didn't have Candy. Yeah, they really wanted him to cancel Tucker, and he wouldn't do it.
And Candace
also. Then he ended up getting shot. Yeah. Well, the final text, you know, what'd he say? I have no choice but to abandon the pro-Israel position. For one, they're cutting his sponsors. Also, he was completely getting attacked everywhere he goes. And hopefully he had a conscience, too. Hopefully he cared about the dead kids. Hopefully it wasn't just about money to him. Because I met him a couple of times, and he seemed like a good person. So that had been eating his conscience up.
Yeah.
That he's taking, you know, potentially hundreds of millions of dollars to support genocide. That can't feel good.
I just, you know, even though he said a lot of bad things, you know, at the end, obviously we don't agree with him at all, but I was really looking, I was hoping, we had planned to meet in person.
It still hurt me. Like, I was battling with him at the time, but it hurt me when he died because I think maybe his heart was good and he would have been switched to the right direction.
He was when we spoke, he was very respectful. We spoke, you know, and we had a nice conversation. It was not an argument.
Yeah, he had a heart, and I think he knew he was on the wrong side.
Yeah,
I think he was eating them up. I could be wrong. There's a little speculation going there, but I think he was eating them up. I was supposed to go debate him on a very large podcast, and then he, you know, pulled out. But he's a better debater than me. But I think he just knew he couldn't defend his position.
How can you when you're on the side of truth?
It was an indefensible position. So him pulling out shows he knew he wasn't on the right side. And I hope it was coming from a pure place of his heart, you know, not just the money.
Yeah. And we were literally, we talked about, you know, he getting together, and it never transpired. But I was hoping that something like that.
These are the important things. Important. I think, like you mentioned, Candace and Tucker, like those. Like I don't know. Well, I've met Tucker, but I don't have his number or anything. But if we get stuff like that, get big, you know. And that's why I'm bringing on more Muslim guests. I have Daniel on, who's a friend of yours. Not turning my podcast into a Muslim podcast, but it's like, okay, I need to start bringing some of these voices on. Let my audience, like when I had Daniel, how do you say his last name?
Hakikachu.
I thought I was going to get some backlash from my audience, and they loved it. Like, this is such a good interview. And it's like, I think they're going to love your interview too, because it's like, it makes sense. They realize, these people aren't our enemy.
Talk to us. That's the thing. Let's sit and talk. Let's have a conversation. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and...
Like, lots of people like don't have any Muslim friends, I think.
That's very important, yeah. Talk, sit with a Muslim. You don't have a Muslim friend, so now that hate propaganda is getting...
If I didn't have any Muslim friends, I'd probably hate you guys because the propaganda is so strong. If you don't have any Muslim friends and you're seeing always the bad guys in movies, always this, constantly told they're a terrorist, well, I'm a critical thinker, I wouldn't. But if you're not, that's going to be your... So it's hard to even blame the people if they haven't been around them.
Yeah,
I think that's why you got to talk to them. And it's like, you're good at understanding that, like, you don't have hatred towards these people, you just want to talk to them.
Yeah. that's where it begins, with a conversation. Mm-hmm. So we covered a lot. I mean, I'm looking forward. We started off with talking about being peacemakers. And so,
yeah, right.
And with individuals, and hopefully, you know, conversations like this can lead to less, as people start to wake up and realize that they've been duped. You know, like Tucker has, and Candace and others, they can become more brave. They can sit and talk with a Muslim. We can have real conversations. You know, we don't have to water down. You don't have to.
No, you guys. There's not going to be perfect. There's always going to be some differences between the two. So yeah. It's not like, but at least there should be a friendship and alliance between the two.
Yeah,
I think we're not far off from that happening. But there is a massive push toward hatred too. So we got to be careful it doesn't go that direction.
I don't know if you've seen this.
Is this Joe Rogan?
See the shirt he's wearing?
Oh, he's wearing your shirt. That's awesome.
This was years ago. Yeah, it was Joe Rogan. He had our shirt on. He also, Joe Rogan, you know Joe Rogan, obviously.
Yeah, I know Joe Rogan well.
Yeah.
He's an amazing guy.
I love the direction. Before, he was actually around certain people, and he had a lot of people who were talking negatively about Islam for a long time. And then we started to do some programs. We were respectfully, you know, refuting some of the things that were said about Islam in a very academic way. I'd bring on a scholar and we'd discuss it. We didn't attack Joe or anything. Yeah. But I think he also, you know.
He'll listen. He's been a little disappointing towards some of this stuff, you know. But I had a private conversation instead of publicly saying thing, you know, like, I wish you'd be a little more. And he stuck for Palestine a little bit, but I wish you'd be a little more, a little harder. But I think, you know, he gets a lot of money from an Israeli company that's connected to the IDF. And, I'm not saying that's why he doesn't speak up more, but like, I don't know. He's a good person. Joe Rogan's a good person.
But it's interesting when you say that, it like comes at the end. A lot of times, you know, you get people who are scared to speak up because at the end of the day, you risk a lot, right?
There's a lot of money, you know, and Joe's tied into tons of friends too, but it's not being hateful towards. Well, again, perfect example, Dave Smith, he's, you know, Ari Shaffir, I've had him on my podcast too, he's, it's like, there are people that are turning against Israel now, and the more that turns, the better. Mm-hmm. But I think it's crazy if you're not turning against Israel. That's, you know, people, America's turning against Israel, so if they keep fighting it, they're showing these anti-Semitic tropes to be too, guys like Mark Levin, Ben Shapiro. It's very clear they're loyal to Israel over America. These people don't give a shit about America. So by them showing that, you know, it's going to make people think, oh, if all Jews are like this, we don't want them here. So if Jews aren't like that, it's time to speak up and be like, hey, I'm America first. I'm putting America before Israel. And you get these guys like Mark Levin. He's like threatening us, basically saying what almost sounds like death threats.
Yeah. Since we're talking about Jews, I want to get your reaction to this.
Okay.
Muslim lands opened their gates wide. In Baghdad, Cairo, Cordoba, Jews weren't just surviving. They were thriving, respected as scholars, appointed as ministers. One side called them heretics. The other called them brothers in faith. Muslims didn't just tolerate Jews. They empowered them, protected them. The history they don't want you to remember. Islam sheltered the Jews when the world turned its back. And look at how they repaid our hospitality.
Yeah, they were living in Palestine and all over the Middle East before the Zionists came in and started doing terrorist attacks, cleansing people. And of course, there was always be times when there would be some differences, but overall, they lived in, I mean, I don't know all the history, but there were in lots of those countries living totally in peace. Mm-hmm. Even once Israel was created, a lot of the Muslims still didn't want to move from the Middle East to Israel. So Mossad started going out, sending bombing these places, blaming it on Muslims to force the Jews to move to Israel.
Mm-hmm. And that propaganda, the reason I show this is because now we'll be talking and be, oh, he's with this Muslim, they hate Jews and whatnot. And I quoted that on your program, professor... A leading professor, David Warrenstein, who quotes in the Chronicles that Islam saved the Jewry, the Jewish people. So to dispel this, that, you know, obviously, you know, this is propaganda that's being pushed and history shows it. It's not something that...
it's recent. People go, oh, this conflict's been going on for thousands of years between the Jews and Muslims. Yeah. Like, no, it's not. It's not. It started at, what, 1947, was it, or so? That's maybe a couple years before that, all things. That's when there's been conflict. It's not a thousand-year-old battle.
What do you think now is going to happen? There's the ceasefire. What do you think is happening? What's going to happen? What do you... your...
I think Israel is going to break it. They're still trying to take the land in the West Bank. And people, you know, your audience probably knows, but a lot of people don't know what they do at the West Bank. It's not even Hamas, how they go there and terrorize people, kill their animals, cut down their trees, take their homes. It's just sick. So I don't think Israel is going to stop. I think Netanyahu and the current government is complete lunatics, and I think it's going to spark back up.
You think there's talk about them making the rich getaway over there for the elites, making the seashore there, the
in Gaza
property, developing that to Trump towers.
It's disgusting, but yeah, that's what they want to do.
You heard of that too?
Yeah, I know. That's Jared Kushner was on there with, was it his dad or some developer, and he says he accidentally slipped up, said something about, yeah, we had the
plans, master plan.
He had the plans drawn up a couple years ago, and Jared like glanced over at him like, you're not supposed to say that.
Yeah.
So they're definitely planning on taking it and rebuilding it, and it's just disgusting what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And people always say, oh, why won't the other Arab countries take them? It's like, well, one, they're in their land right now. And two, once they take that land, they're going to try to take more, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know the Greater Israel Project, which a lot of them believe and don't deny it, where they want to take a lot of that land.
Wow. So it's going to, you feel it's going to just keep going, huh?
I hope I'm wrong, but I think there'll be more war. But America's turning on them. I don't know. Like, Israel might not exist in 10 years. They might have overplayed their hand and been too arrogant, too conceited, and think they just completely control America. And I think they're losing our support.
Uh-huh.
But unfortunately, they still control all of our politicians. You know, the two Republicans that have turned on Israel, Trump's calling them traitors. And yeah. Trump's the one who's actually a traitor. People ask me why I turned on Trump. Trump turned on me. I didn't turn on Trump. He's the one that, you know, stopped being America first.
Who's the lady? She's House of Representative, the blonde hair.
Something Taylor Greene, Marjorie Taylor Greene, something like that. She's been great.
She was actually talking about how when she was questioned by someone about, are you getting a lot of people who are coming to you and asking you about Sharia? She's like, never, because the guy was questioning her about what's happening on X,
mm-hmm.
and she also talks about how she believes that this is like what we're talking about, being funded, because her constituent people come and they're talking about real issues that they're having, mm-hmm. and nobody's coming here talking about asking me about Sharia.
No one's concerned about,
but if you watch X, you think Muslims are like a majority, they're about to like chop your head off, they're going to take over everything. If you watch the feeds and
no, that's what they act like. I think I've never been to Dearborn. I think I'm going to go out there for a day or two and do a little mini shooting and see for myself what it's like. Because I actually don't know what it's like, but I hear how bad it is. So I'm going to go out there, talk to people, and go find out.
That's a good idea.
How far from here is that? It's not that far, is it?
That's an hour flight, 5 hours driving.
So I think maybe I'm so busy. Maybe like in 2 months when I'm out in Chicago, I'll go out there.
Let's maybe we'll go together.
Dude, that'd be awesome if you want to come with me.
Dearborn, here we come.
Because I'm going to film like a little mini documentary. Spend a day or two out there.
I'll make the connect. I got people.
Someone said they might be able to connect me with the mayor out there.
There we go.
But I'm going to be completely unbiased. Whatever I see, I'm going to show. If the Muslims look bad there, I'm going to show that. Just you know. So I'm being honest. I'm going to show what I honestly see.
Okay, there's a really good independent documentary. It's called Raqqa News. I don't know if you heard Raqqa News. They try to. This is the first time I got exposed to them. You can watch this, and they talk about how this is interesting, because they talk about how vacant land in Buffalo, some of the worst area in Buffalo, their wasteland, it's like, you know, violent, people are scared to come out of their houses, and they talk about how the Muslims have come and they've bought some of the empty churches and they've turned them into mosques, and the people now, the families are coming. And the neighbors around, they're saying, people can watch this Raqqa News, and you can see the documentary they put. And what's interesting is they're showing how people now feel safe to come out. Their kids can play outside.
Interesting.
Yeah, their kids can play outside. They're not trying to Shariaize the neighborhood.
This is near Dearborn, same area.
This is in Buffalo.
Okay.
Yeah, Buffalo. So they're showing how what Charlie Kirk talked about before he passed. He says, this is the American dream, that our families can go outside and we can play till the sunrise. But in this violent wasteland in America, where Muslims are condensing, just like in Dearborn over there, you got safer areas. No one's trying to implement, change any constitution, but now crime is lower. People feel safer. The money's coming back into the neighborhoods. Businesses are opening. It's thriving. Would you rather have just stayed in slums?
I know better than a little about Dearborn. That's why I should go out there, because I'm honestly going there unbiased.
Yeah.
And I will give an unbiased report. If I see bad things, I'm sure.
I'm sure. Yeah.
I have to be completely honest, you know. That's whatever. If you want people to trust me, I have to show what I honestly see. So,
but then you'll go to New York, for example, mm-hmm. and you'll have Jews there who have their own like almost like police force. Right? Yeah,
did you hear when they left that black kid to die? It was like years ago. There was like massive riots.
I didn't hear about that.
This was a long time ago. Yeah. I can't remember what year, maybe like 30 years ago. I think it was a Jew hit a black kid. He ended up dying, but they picked up the Jewish guy, the Jewish ambulance, and left the black kid to die in the street. And there was like riots after.
See, in Islam, this is unacceptable. This is not, you cannot do that. But now we're not complaining. Nobody's saying, look, they're trying to take over New York and they're trying to, but they got pretty much.
That's how it is. Certain people go to certain areas.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I don't want our whole country, unless people convert naturally, to be, you know, I don't want to bring in tons of Muslims from all over the world. Yeah. I don't want to bring people from anywhere. So I'm not like trying to flood our country with Muslims, but I also have no problem if Muslims want certain areas and they get along with Muslims, great.
You obey the law. You come here, help to make the country
come
better.
Come in legally, I don't want people coming in illegally from anywhere.
Absolutely. We're on the same page.
And if people break laws, they should be kicked out of the country.
Yeah. And you'll see these people who they'll try to, look, Islam is what we say is perfect. But then you have Muslims, let's say somebody who, you know, they did a report that 300, almost 400%, this is, I'll put it up on the screen, 400% more media coverage is given to somebody who's somehow connected to Islam, a Muslim. So imagine 400 times more media report. Yeah. If somebody does something, he's mentally deranged, he's doing something opposite to the religion, and you're not even checking that if he's altogether there.
Yeah.
But imagine, you know what almost 400 times more media publicity is? Something that would, let's say, their religion is not brought up or anything, but all of a sudden, if he's Muslim, Muhammad, or somehow connected, it's front page.
They drive it like all crazy. Over. Yeah,
so
like,
naturally, now that's gonna so, that know, goes the, back
the
to the propaganda.
Muslims, they really push those. They don't check were they on SSI drugs, were they on or SSR, whatever those drugs are, the antipsychotic drugs, were they on antidepressants? Like let's check this type of stuff.
And there was a stabbing in UK, and the guy, they say the rail worker Samir, he ended up stepping up and saving many lives. But
I remember that, and because he was like Muslim, right? It kind of didn't really get any attention.
Exactly.
I remember that you're talking about.
Yeah, but let's say if it was the opposite, if he was the one who was doing the crime, all over Muslim terrorists, they're gonna like you know.
It would have been and there are a few. I mean, obviously, there's examples where Muslims do bad things. I don't know the details of this, but there was one where there's you know some Pakis, they were doing some like. Where they're like, I think they had like some kind of girls, young girls doing sex work, and the media kind of buried it, and that's absolutely horrible. This should
disgusting.
Be condemned. I think we should hang. I think you agree that these are terrible, evil people.
If you caught them, that's almost like the death penalty in Islam. Mm-hmm. You see, we don't joke. But here's the thing: like as a Muslim, you're not even supposed to practice Muslim. Be alone with the opposite gender if that's not your family member, because of things that can transpire. That's not supposed to. So let alone to be, you're not even. You're supposed to have girlfriend. You're supposed to marry the woman, have a wife. Let alone, you know, doing, you know, grooming to have any
so
kind
you
of
can
permission.
Agree that's disgusting. These people should be handled badly. So exactly. You have common sense.
They're like the MS-13 or the cartel members who are wearing
who
crosses.
Are Christians. Yeah, they do wear it's crazy. They're wearing crosses. They kill people. Exactly. That's a perfect analogy.
Yeah. So they don't represent Christianity. These guys don't represent Islam. Done deal. That's it.
Well, another interesting complex thing is okay. Islam is such a large religion. There's so many different countries, so there's different cultures. So they're not all going to be the same. Mm. You have different sort of the religion, but you have all these different cultures under it. So you can't expect them. There's going to be some differences. And people, I don't understand how people can't understand that.
And I always give this example. I give, look, in Islam, you cannot drink alcohol. You cannot fornicate. You cannot go ahead and gamble. But Muslims do that.
Yeah.
So they're just not following Islam. So if a Muslim does an evil act, he commits an act of terror, he's doing opposite to Islam. It's very simple to understand.
No, they need to, exactly. And I have Muslim friends that occasionally drink and like messed up, and it's like, oh, well, you know, doing the best, or you know, but you shouldn't do it. You should try your hardest not to do these things.
Exactly. So,
and if you sin occasionally, you know, if you truly mean it, Allah will forgive you, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
As long
yeah.
as you truly mean it.
Yes. Yeah.
That's why I talked to my friend who's trying to convert me. I'm like, well, what if I messed up and drank? He's like, well, you know, you shouldn't, but if you messed up, you know, Allah is forgiving.
It's a step-by-step process, you know what I mean? It's a step. Mm-hmm. And that's why the five pillars are there. there are things like tomorrow you want to become, you know, the best at jiu-jitsu, you're going to have to go ahead and follow the curriculum, right? You're going to have to train.
Yeah,
you're going to have
it takes a while.
Takes time.
It's hard work.
You're going to get tapped out.
Yeah,
you're going to get, you know.
Jiu-jitsu is the most humbling thing ever.
Yeah. So same thing over here. There's a process. There's things that you do. You gain knowledge. You gain more understanding. And then you naturally, you want to leave off some
early
of
on,
things.
I make a couple of mistakes. It doesn't mean I'm a terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
No, he's trying to explain that. I'm like, oh, that makes it a little easier. It doesn't mean I could go and drink still, but it
you
means
don't,
like
don't,
if I messed up or, you know.
You don't come into Islam perfect. You come into Islam the worst, and it makes you better. That's it.
Make yourself the best you can.
That's it. It makes
you know, it's like we all struggle with things. You know, I struggled giving up girls. I love girls so much, you know. Mm-hmm. Okay, I need to get serious, have children. But it was a struggle that I had to battle with.
Yeah. Where can people find you, Jim?
My podcast, well, basically everywhere I put it, like YouTube, is it Jake Shields? If you put my name, it'll come up. On Twitter, Jake Shields, AJJ, Instagram, Rumble, because some of my stuff gets, you know, cut off of YouTube. Just put my name in, probably most places it pops up, just Jake Shields. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to support the podcast, I have, or support me, I have a fightbackpodcast.com if people want to buy merch or anything like that.
Yeah.
Man, yeah, thanks so much. Well, we definitely be having more conversations. And that Dearborn thing might be cool. I really want to do that.
Yeah, let's check back
and just go out there unbiased and see what we see out there, because I hear, oh, how terrible it is. And I'll just go see for myself.
Sounds like a plan.
Cool. Right, well. Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you. And thank you guys. We'll see you next time. Peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.